Now, today we live in a very different world than the one we lived in as little as 4 or 5 years ago. There are things on the world scene that we would have figured are totally unimaginable. This message, I could have given it a few months ago. In fact, I did sort of touch on it a little bit last January, but not with the degree of specificity that we can talk about today, because things have changed dramatically. Today is June 27th, 2026, and I don't usually mention that in a message. Usually there's no need for it, but when they come after me with baseball bats after this one, perhaps it would be good to have the context of where we are here. What does Russia's self-inflicted calamity suggest for the near future? Now, we can entertain that question today with a very different realization in mind than we would have, let's say, 4 or more years ago. Because what has happened, we would never have predicted. Question is Russia's present situation prophetically relevant? Depending on what sources you access for that question, a different situation for Russia is described. There's a specific prophecy that prompts today's message. Perhaps not as directly answering the matter as we would like it to be, because there is always a certain degree of speculation in interpreting or assigning any particular prophecy. So with that in mind, let's keep in mind certain things we see through a glass darkly. There's that verse that tells us, but the closer we get to that glass, and the cleaner that glass becomes, we can see through to things that we wouldn't ordinarily or otherwise have seen. In Daniel chapter 12, it mentions that certain key prophecies that were given to Daniel that are very specific, that are very revealing, that are very accurate, were sealed. They weren't to be understood. He went to his grave perplexed with some of the things that God gave him. And yet, it says, in the last times, those prophecies will become unsealed and understood. So as we get closer to the time, these prophecies will become more understandable to us than they otherwise would have been. The prophecy that I'm referring to is what we see in Daniel chapter 7, and I've spoken on that before, I won't take the time to elaborate, but there are specifics there that we need to understand is relevant to the time of the end. Now, there's another prophecy that has also affected the evangelical world, and that is found in Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39. And the evangelical world has made a big deal out of that prophecy. And they have determined that what it's talking about is the fact that Russia was going to invade the land of Israel in the last days. And to them, they think it's imminent. Could happen any day. But when we look at the current situation, where Russia is, with respect to its military capability and its economy, we have to wonder, how likely is that to be in this generation? And that's what we need to factor into our thinking, the reality of the idea that that prophecy refers to that particular event. And the prophecy is the one that talks about Gog and Magog. I'm sure everyone is familiar with that. When I was about 5 or 6 years old, I first heard of this in the Baptist church. This was back in the very early 50s, right after World War II had ended. And Russia was looming greater and greater. This was the era of the Cold War, where Americans were busy out in their backyard digging bomb shelters for themselves. Do you remember that? I don't know how many would remember that, but that's what was going on. Russia was a great looming threat to the United States. It was perceived as one. So for at least 75 years, the evangelical world has been hooked into the thinking that the prophecies regarding Gog refer to Russia. And there's a lot of convincing associations with the names and so on that seemed very logical at the time, still do. And some of that thinking has entered into our understanding, some of our teachings, and we'll find it. I remember hearing of it when I first became introduced to the Worldwide Church. But the question is our identification correct? Is where we're going with that correct? Now, I first heard of this, like I say, as a young person. That was 75 years ago. Okay, this idea has been around for a long time. In fact, it goes back another half century before that, before you can introduce into the evangelical thought stream. That Gog represents Russia. And they take from that prophecy that Russia is going to invade the land of Israel. Now, that creates some complications. The complications being, well, what about the Battle of Armageddon? Because that isn't the Battle of Armageddon. When you read the prophecies, and there's two major areas in the scripture that talk about it, when you read those prophecies, they don't describe the event that we read of in the Battle of Armageddon. Now, there's two places, and one, of course, is where I just mentioned, Ezekiel 38 and 39. But the Gog situation is also mentioned in Revelation chapter 20. Now, if you read Revelation chapter 20, that army being raised is raised by Satan after his release from his 1,000 years captivity. So we know for a fact that Revelation 20 is clearly talking about the post-millennial era. That battle, if it is one, occurs after the millennium, okay, after 1,000 years. Question is, does the corresponding prophecy in Ezekiel 38 and 39 refer to the same event, or is that a separate event? Now, with those that I've talked to among our own belief system, there's a variation of opinion on that. The consensus I'm finding is more to the idea that there are two separate prophecies that apply in two different points in time. I don't know that that's the issue here. What is the issue here is Gog really Russia? And there's opinions are out on that too. And secondly, is Russia going to invade the land of Israel any day now? Because that's what the evangelicals are saying. In fact, I find even in the Jewish world, there is that opinion. And they get it from this one place. Sometimes when we identify with a particular idea, that identity can sort of divert us from understanding something else. Just as an obscure, for instance, if Russia is going to invade the Middle East, What about the Battle of Armageddon? That has to be completed and out of the way before the other can happen. Because we know that the Battle of Armageddon is going to be hosted by the 10 nations of United Europe. That's what we've taught for as long as I know. That's a whole different group of people. God is going to inspire the formation of that entity that we call the King of the North. And in the same general time frame, there's going to form another political entity that we call the King of the South. And that's clearly laid out in Daniel chapter 11 from about the middle of the chapter on. Daniel 11 is a historical assessment of various things that took place, extremely accurate. So accurate that Bible scholars think that, well, Daniel 11 was written after the fact. It's too accurate to be otherwise. But it wasn't. And Jesus Christ even referred to that chapter as something to watch for. So we know that it was certainly well known in his day. But the King of the North is going to invade the King of the South. He is going to set up his military headquarters in Jerusalem. We can read of that in the last few verses of Daniel chapter 11. But the fundamentalist view that Gog is Russia is sort of a prism through which most prophecy interpreters look. And it can distort the picture enormously, and it's something we need to be aware of, that that application is not reliable. It is not correct. Let me be a little more direct. It's not a correct assessment. Gog in that situation is not Russia, and there are scholars who have identified who actually they are. But we also keep in mind the time frame of when this particular event is going to happen. It's prophesied to happen. It will happen. But when? And with whom? Who are the participants? The rise of the Gog and Magog prophecy seemed to make some real good sense in the post-World War II situation. It was a time primed for that. It had significant credibility. It received ready acceptance in the evangelical communities. It was their whole interpretive orientation for understanding Bible prophecy. And let's understand, God gave us end-time prophecy for a very important reason. It's going to be a factor in our lives as we see things happen and as we begin to assess what's going on and as we begin to see the imminent second coming. It's going to be important to correctly understand Bible prophecies. You'll find people like Hal Lindsey is a major proponent of that particular thinking, that orientation. Joel Rosenberg is another one. I was kind of surprised to see that. But he, in his All Israel News, talks about the same thing as the evangelicals. There's a whole prophetic scenario that's centered on one focused narrative, and that's this one. And it's an embedded defect which prevents them from correctly understanding the true prophecies that God has given, and that being particularly Daniel chapter 7 and Daniel chapter 11. So Gog and Magog situation is not the Battle of Armageddon. We shouldn't associate the two. Another question we need to ask ourselves. There is to be a Gog and Magog incident, let's say, prior to the second coming. And the other one we know for sure in Revelation 20 is after the millennial. Will that power of Gog, whoever it is, remain a significant military power all through and after the millennial age? That's not a question that prophecy interpreters are asking, but it's a factor to think about. How could such a thing be? Well, there's one important connection, and that would be Satan. And where do we see Satan in this prophecy? We see it in Revelation 20 very clearly, where he is released from prison and he goes out and deceives the nation and raises an army that is going to move against the world headquarters in Jerusalem at the end of the millennial age. So Satan would be the consistent factor that conveys the power of Gog before and after the millennium, if in fact Ezekiel 37 and 38 and 9 apply to the time period before. Daniel chapter 7 presents or pictures a coalition of powers, as does Revelation chapter 13. Those two particular chapters reflect on and amplify and help clarify each other. They both present the same physical characteristics. In Daniel 7, they are successive to one another. In Revelation 13, the same characteristics are put together in a single entity. That's important to understand. But the question before us, and we read of that in Daniel 7 particularly, there's a description of a component of the beast power that is called the bear. Who is the bear? In Daniel chapter 7, we're presented with three world empires. And a lot of people compare those three with the first three of Daniel chapter 2. And I've made a point many times that, no, those are two different prophecies. One is successive and one is coincident. But in chapter 7, we read of the standing lion with the heart of a man, followed by a bear, a leaning bear with three ribs in its mouth. And after that comes the leopard. Call it a coincidence if you want, but the three modern world empires that came into being came to be in that order. First, the British Empire. Then the Russian Empire, followed by the German Empire. And all of these encompass Europe, where the beast power is going to come from. It's very difficult to not make the association that United Europe incorporates the characteristics of these three world empires that basically ceased to be powerful in the middle of the last century. But who is the bear? Let's go to Daniel chapter 7 and just look at its description, because it's hard to miss an association with the characteristics that we see in what we would call Russia. Daniel 7, verse 5, and this is the second empire that is being talked about, that is being presented here. It says, "And behold, another beast, a second, like unto a bear, and it raised up itself on one side," so this thing is leaning, "and it had three ribs in its mouth, and between the teeth of it, and they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh." This particular empire is known for being brutally efficient in destroying human lives. Who is the bear? Who could it be? Is this bear that we read of here referring to the Russian Empire? It's told to devour much flesh. It is seen with three ribs in its mouth. In the late 1700s, under the reign of Catherine the Great, they annexed three ribs of land. And this is when the Russian Empire was beginning to reach its height and power. And with some colorization, we can see what those ribs are. Now, this area stretches from the Baltic down to, this is Crimea, so the Ukraine is right here. So this is on the western side of Ukraine, most of it. But there are three ribs of land that were annexed in the late 1700s. After World War II, they annexed three Baltic nations, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. So there's a characteristic with the Russians. Call it a coincidence, but to me it helps make it logical to make that identification. The Russians inflicted massive famines and great purges amongst its own people. Stalin, for example, in 1932 and 1933, caused the deaths of 3.9 million of his own people in Ukraine, where he took all of their grain and sold it and left them to famine. I want to read to you some thoughts that were written by people who had no awareness of what Daniel 7 talks about. But this is Viktor Orban, the prime minister of Hungary, and this is what he wrote. And this is from Parade magazine of March of 2002. Keep in mind, this man has no conception of this prophecy in Daniel chapter 7. But here's what he said. Coming to terms with the worst abuses of the communists is a big challenge for Eastern Europe. Hungary is now putting this ugly past on display. Last month in Budapest, Prime Minister Viktor Orban unveiled the House of Terror, a new national museum that's based in the former headquarters of the later communist secret police. Visitors will see the interrogation center, the prison, and torture chambers used both by the Nazis and by Hungary's old totalitarian government. It's been documented that as many as 100 million died under communist tyrannies around the world since 1917, says Orban. The House of Terror is a tribute to all these who suffered. Another entry in the National Geographic magazine in 1998, September of 98, where this author wrote, and keep in mind he has no awareness of Daniel chapter 7, verse 5, but there's this picture of the Winter Palace in Russia, where he wrote, from the cold grandeur of the Winter Palace, Catherine the Great saw the expansion of her empire through wars with the Ottoman Empire and seizures of Polish land to 19th century revolutionary Alexander Herzen. The palace perfectly symbolized the Russian state, where he wrote, like a ship floating on the surface, it had no real connection with the inhabitants of the ocean beyond that of eating them. Now, this is one of their own, writing of their own history. Another entry, and this is, I don't have a source for this one right now, but here is another poet that was writing about the Russian state. She was christened in childhood with a lash, torn to pieces, scorched. Her soul was trampled by the feet, inflicting blow upon blow. Pasengis, Varangians, Tartars, and our own people, much more terrible than the Tartars. Russia has a long and violent history of abusing its own people. Just think of World War II, where they just had to throw millions of people against the Nazis without regard to the magnitude of their losses, simply to preserve their own situation, their own state. If the bear isn't Russia, it certainly meets the description that we read from history. To this day, Russia is brutal on its own people. Look what's happening in the war that they're involved in right now. 30,000 a month being lost on the front line where there's basically no gain. And they can't stop. Their economy is destroyed. Their military hardware is depleted. They've got nothing left. What does that mean? Because we have a world situation that's very different than we would have expected to find as little as 4 years ago. You see, Russia has posed as a major world power from since World War II. We've thought of them as being a formidable power. The facts have proved otherwise. Look at their invasion of Finland, the beginning of World War II. They thought it would be a cakewalk. Turns out the Finns gave them something to think about. Think about Afghanistan. Mighty Russia. They get kicked out of Afghanistan in defeat. Look where they are today. When they first approached the idea, Putin thought that they're going to be in and out of there in 4 days. No comparison. The power of Russia versus the power of Ukraine. Are you kidding? Should have been a cakewalk. It wasn't. Why? But it's destroyed their military. It's destroyed their economy. It's going to destroy their government, not only the leadership, but the whole structure of the Russian government. And that's some speculation on my part, but how could it be otherwise? Putin's in big trouble. He's going to be replaced, but by what? Is he going to be replaced by another of the same ilk? Or is this turmoil that has basically destroyed their power and their economy, is this turmoil going to cause them to change their whole form of government, a form that would then be amenable to or acceptable by the other nations of Europe? This situation is what I'm posing to you, is this situation may open the door for assimilation of the Russian Empire into United Europe. And if so, that would correspond with this prophecy that we see in Daniel chapter 7, where the bear is going to be part of that coalition of nations. The bear's characteristic, the claws in Revelation 13, is shown to be there as a characteristic of this greater empire that we see, which is called the fourth beast, which is the king of the north, which is United Europe, which is the beast power. Is it possible that this calamity in Russia is going to open the possibility of them being embraced by the Europeans into a European Union? Think about the implications with NATO on that one. But here's another thing to think about. With their economy such as it is, they're going to be desperate for economic survival. Russia has already, and it's not widely reported, but Russia has already sold the rights to control some of their Far East to the Chinese. There's all kinds of concern about China invading Taiwan. But with the Chinese, and I don't think they're stupid, but with the Chinese looking at Russia's situation in Ukraine, maybe they're going to think, you know, us invading Taiwan might incur the same disaster, which I expect it would. But instead of Taiwan, that has very little advantage to the Chinese other than political upsmanship, maybe they would look north and say, maybe there's more in it for us to look north, to either purchase the rights or simply take over Siberia and Mongolia. If that were to happen, and Siberia does want to secede from Russia, but if that were to happen, think about the psyche, think about the psychological impact that would have on the Russians. They would be scared. Why? To lose their Far East? There's huge mineral resources in the Far East. If they were to lose that, what does that do to their economy? And they can't invade back because their military isn't up to the task. They have huge territory. And huge territory has an advantage in one respect. If someone is invading, as the Nazis found out, huge territory is a big factor. But it's also a liability, because if you have to go and reconquer huge, vast, uninhabited territories, how do you do that? So Russia might find its, and I'm talking about Western Russia, what is called White Russia, not the Oriental Russia, but the Western Russia. Where would they be looking for some protection against a vast power to their east? Now, there's a prophecy in Daniel 11:44, where it talks about news out of the east and the north will alarm him. And the him in this case is the beast power whose military headquarters is in Jerusalem at this point in time. This is toward the end of the 3.5 years of tribulation. This is the end of that 3.5 years, after which the beast power has conquered the Middle East. Think about it. When news out of the east and north comes to him, having had problems defending, if they even could, their own eastern territories, that would be even more frightening. Now, of that army from the east and north, there's another prophecy that says of them that their purpose is to destroy a third of humanity. Okay, so on their way to meet up with the beast's armies on the plains of Megiddo, they are to destroy a third of humanity. Where would that be? Philippines? South America? No, they're going to go after the beast's homeland. The beast's military is headquartered in Jerusalem, but their homeland is vulnerable where it is. So the implications of that particular minor, seemingly a minor comment in Daniel 11 could be profoundly significant. Okay, that's Revelation 9:14-18. We should look at that. I said it was in Daniel 11, but it's not. Revelation 9. We want to see that verse. Verse 14. And this is that horde of invaders coming from the east, the Far East. Verse 14, it says, saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were loosened, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year, for to slay the third part of men. So this is that invading force. The carnage is going to be unbelievable. And this is the prelude to the Battle of Armageddon. Because after this, they're going to descend south into the Middle East, gathering on the plains of Megiddo, intending to assault the beast's army, when just before that, Jesus Christ is going to descend and destroy the whole lot. So that's the scenario that we see. But the world doesn't understand it quite that way. They're too focused on Gog being Russia and Russia being the invader of the Middle East from the north. Well, yeah, they're in the north, but that's not the only consideration. But what we need to understand is this preoccupation with the Gog and Magog prophecies, one of which we know for sure is after the millennium. Whether the other one is as well, that's debatable. It seems like, in Ezekiel 38 and 39, that the setting is a time when Jerusalem and the land of Israel is at peace, unwalled, undefended. That would suggest a millennial setting. I realize I'm putting a lot of information out here, and I hope at least it will prompt you to look into these matters and do some study on your own. We don't necessarily have to draw the same conclusions. I'm just posing to you some possibilities that, under the present circumstances, seem to have some validity. They seem to make some sense. But what gain could Russia ever hope to have conquering Ukraine if it caused them to lose Siberia? That would be massive economically. That would leave them with very little ability to retake that territory with what they've got now. They're having trouble on a short front with Ukraine to their immediate south. How could they possibly defend the vast expanse of their eastern territory? I don't know if you've been reading or noticing in the news, but Crimea right now has turned into a useless appendage. It's militarily ineffectual. It's isolated from the rest of the country. The bridges are out. The Turks have told them they cannot send their warships through the Straits of Bosporus. It's basically an isolated lake at the moment. Not a good thing. Not a good thing for Russia at all. We're going to see a power shift in Asia between Russia's west and east. Those will be developments to watch. The last days, prophecies, have power centers of prophetic note, and that will be Europe, the Middle East, and Asia, and you can see that clearly in Daniel 11. The king of the north will establish his military headquarters in Jerusalem. That's Daniel 11:45. His population base will be in continental Europe. In Daniel 11:39, we see that the beast power is going to sell regional control to the highest bidder. And when these disturbing threats emerge from the north and the east, and that's in Daniel 11:44, what will these regional buyers of control do? Because if the beast power is defeated, they lose their positions of influence. So they're going to be compelled to come in and join with the beast power, with their armies, to help him against the invading force from the north. So all of this makes a certain amount of sense. Today's situation poses a greater possibility of imminent fulfillment than does the other idea of Gog being Russia invading the Middle East. So who are the Armageddon participants? The whole military array of the whole world. Those nations that had bought regional control. That assures the beast power of effective allies. The major military powers would be an effective obligation to preserve their investment by supporting the ones who sold it to them, who gave it to them. So these are things that we need to consider, to think about, because this world is changing. In Matthew 24:8, Jesus talks about the beginning of sorrows. And I would say very likely that we are in that period of time that we could consider to be the beginning of sorrows. The end of the world is not yet. The world talks about the end of the world coming. Oh, there's going to be World War III, and that's going to be the end of the world. No, no, that's just a factor in the series of events that are going to come upon us. We're looking at the beginning of the end. We're looking at the stage being set for the beginning of the end. A famous quote from Winston Churchill in the early years of World War II, where he said, "This is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end, but it is, perhaps, the end of the beginning." This world is not going to end as people think. The Battle of Armageddon is not the end of the world. It's merely the transition between this world, this age, and the age to come. The Great Tribulation is real. And it encompasses at least 3.5 years of the beast's reign. But we know from Daniel 2:44 that the millennial kingdom will not be left to the usual rulers. It will not be left to other people. The people that it would be left to are the peoples of God, who are going to be given assignments, positions of influence in the world to come. Who would have predicted this situation more than 4 years ago? Unthinkable. Russia, great military power. They've maintained that posture, I'll call it a posture of great power, since the end of World War II. Growing up, Russia was this huge threat. There was this huge military power. The whole United States military structure was poised in response to what was actually hype. They weren't as powerful as they proposed themselves being. We know that now. They've proved it time and time again. We wouldn't have thought so back then. But we have now a situation that forces us to consider the possibility that things are going to come about differently than we might have thought. There is a practical reality. It may not conform to the scenario of prophetic understandings that the world has had. Nevertheless, they will come to be as God intends them to come to be. We need to consider where things are going, what can happen. But I see the possibility of the door being opened for the bear to enter the embrace of the lion and the leopard. As that prophecy in Daniel 7 tells us, and as the prophecy in Revelation 13 tells us, I see the possibility of that coming about now, where half a decade ago it would have been thought absurd. Now, my article on this subject was written at least 15, maybe more years ago. And I'm not the only one who understands the bear to be who they are. I'm just posing to you. Think about it. See the possibility. Because in Luke 21, 28, Jesus told us, "And when these things begin to come to pass, look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draws nigh." Now, there are some handouts that go with this. We talked about this at Bible study last Tuesday. There's only about 5 copies. I can get more if someone needs it. I can email this to you if you would rather have it that way. But it kind of describes Russia's characteristics, and it's got a very explicit article here posted in the Christian Post Guest Voices by Jeffrey Goodman, PhD. So he explains the true identity of Gog and Magog, and there's many that say about the same thing I've heard from other sources. But it's something we need to realize, that the world's view of who Gog is and what they're going to do distorts people's understanding of the end time prophecies that we are going to see coming to pass before our own eyes. So look up. We may not realize it, but your redemption draws nigh.